This is the TTY Dialer, episode 12, for the week of January 9th through January 14th. Hi, I'm Mark LeBonier. This is your weekly companion to WRVO Public Media's old-time radio show Tuned to Yesterday. 7 nights a week on the air, we bring you mystery, comedy, drama, suspense, adventure, and much more from radio's golden age. With past episodes posted online at WRVO.org, this podcast brings you fun with sound from radio's past, radio history, and a look at the shows coming up for the week. This is best listened to on Sundays or Mondays, but if it's later than that, it certainly won't spoil it.
Listen carefully if you'd like a new Ford Victoria every year for 5 years. Tonight's the last time we're broadcasting details of how to enter Kraft Oil's sensational Name the Cake contest. Tomorrow, get a green-capped bottle of Kraft Oil at your grocer's. You'll find the recipe for the cake that needs a name printed inside the label. And also be sure to get the official entry blank that gives easy contest rules. Just bake the cake, enjoy it, and decide on a name that describes it. The name you send to Kraft Oil may win a brand new Ford every year for 5 years. You get a deluxe Ford Victoria the first year and then trade it in without further cost to you on the newest model every year for the next 4 years. Additional prizes include Dormeyer electric broiler rotisseries, Dormeyer electric blankets, Dormeyer power mixers, Dormeyer portable mixers, and Dormeyer frywells. Altogether, 1,851 prizes. You'll find the complete list on the entry blanks at your grocer's, and also news about a special bonus prize. But hurry! Your Name the Cake contest entry must be mailed to Kraft Oil within 10 days. Get your entry off right away. You may be the winner of a new Ford Victoria every year for 5 years, or one of the valuable Dormeyer electric appliances.
That was the tail end of a radio promotion heard on a beloved sitcom of the 1940s and 50s called The Great Gildersleeve. Weeks earlier on the show, the character of Bertie the Maid had made a, what she called, mystery cake for a contest at the county fair and won, and the show's sponsor, Kraft Foods, had planned a promotion involving listeners to get in on their own contest where they named Bertie's mystery cake.
I haven't even tasted the cake.
I'll bake you another one, Leroy.
Wow.
Bertie's prize-winning cake.
Say, the Kraft people will be interested in Bertie's cake recipe, and I'll bet all of our friends will, too. So listen in next week, everybody, and see what happens. Have your ears glued to the radio.
Won't that be uncomfortable?
Leroy. Good night, folks.
If I was listening back then, I would probably think that the next week the recipe would be given out on the air. But the contest was rolled out to name the cake, and it took a turn where listeners had to buy a bottle of Kraft Oil to find that cake recipe. Now, today, using oil to make a cake is pretty commonplace, but at that time, cakes mainly called for shortening, butter, or lard. So this vegetable oil method, discovered just a few years earlier, was turning a lot of heads and was able to be another selling point for the oil, apart from its use in salads, among other things. Soon after the contest was introduced, with a new Ford car and appliance prizes if someone had the winning name of the cake, references to the Great Gildersleeve Show and its magazine and radio promotions pretty much vanished, even during the commercial spots on the Gildersleeve Show itself. Which is a bit strange, because up until this contest, Gildersleeve's image and characters on the show were often used to help sell the Kraft brand, in particular its line of parquet margarine. So it's sort of a mystery why the intro was strong, but the following weeks focused more on Ford, which, you know what, given the selling power of that company throughout the years, it could stand to reason that a picture or mention of a beautiful car that you could win was more attractive than the face of a overweight mustachioed man who would be off the air in a matter of months. Now, whatever the case, it's a great example of one of the many product tie-ins from radio's yesteryear. This Monday night on Tuned to Yesterday, it's Orson Welles and the Campbell Playhouse with an adventure called Escape. That's an hour long. Then at 11 o'clock, it's romance from episodes of the Damon Runyon Theater and the First Nighter program. This Tuesday night, January 10th at 10, we have an hour of comedy from Penny Singleton's show. Listeners would know her best portraying the comic character Blondie. After that, it's Joan Davis time with guest Gary Moore. And at 11 o'clock Tuesday night, the Lux Radio Theater brings us the film In Old Oklahoma.
You can run along now, Summers. Oh, but I got to look after your interests, boss.
Were you invited?
Well, if I'm going to be your bodyguard, I figured, well, I got to guard your body.
Go on, get out.
You mean you want me to go?
Definitely.
Okay, I can take a hint.
Well, Jim, maybe he should stay.
Now, what on earth?
Well, she means that a man like you, Mr. Gardner, who's made so much money so quickly, is kind of apt to have a few enemies.
A few? I've got dozens. Now get.
Okay, I'm getting.
Hear these shows Monday and Tuesday, January 9th and 10th, on the air live from 10 to midnight, or streaming live at WRVO.org.
Operator. Operator, get me the office of John J. Malone.
The premiere of the program Murder and Mr. Malone this week on January 11th, 1947 may have had some of its crime stories and its introduction worked out, but its producers didn't foresee the several name changes the program underwent or leading actors either, which eventually led to its failure after just a short time on the air. It was a Saturday night show on ABC at first, and based on the stories of famed female novelist Craig Rice, who had the distinction of being the very first mystery writer to make the cover of Time magazine. Her best-selling character, John J. Malone, was billed on the air as fiction's most famous criminal lawyer, and he was played by several actors but made famous by veteran radio star Frank Lovejoy at first. In several ways, this role would style his future character of reporter Randy Stone on the show Nightbeat, you may know of, with his narrative and versatile style, or maybe the fact that both characters were based in Chicago. The last to portray Malone on the air was George Petrie, who, when the show went to television for a 13-episode run, was just featured as a bit player on the series, the TV lead played by Lee Tracy, who on radio at the same time in 1951, its final year on the air, was hosting and acting in the Army syndicated show Proudly We Hail. Many of the broadcasts of Murder and Mr. Malone, or The Amazing Mr. Malone, were written by Eugene Wang, who was a lawyer himself, and he would later write for The Falcon on radio and television's Perry Mason. In many ways, this show was a lot like Philip Marlowe or Sam Spade, maybe, of course, in terms of plot, but in other ways, not a strong relationship to the original stories in print, but the name of the famous character brought together with new tales by great radio talent. Here's an excerpt from a broadcast from 1948.
And that's where I got into the act. 2 hours and 47 minutes after the murder of Connie Burton, I was down at headquarters. As I walked over from my office, I made an interesting discovery. The path from my door leading to the Homicide Bureau was an inch lower than the adjacent territory. I was in a rut.
Well, as I live and breathe.
That's what amazes me, Lieutenant.
What?
Why you live and breathe?
Oh, that's a splendid one.
Where's my client?
Oh, well, did you care to pass a few pleasantries with me?
Where's June Holland?
Oh, I guess I don't have it for you anymore. Sussman, did someone mention my name?
Yeah, Mr. Malone would like to see his client.
His slightest wish is my command.
Have you boys ever considered radio as a career?
Well, we're working on an act, but we're stuck for a name.
Why'd you call it the Bob Hope Show?
Oh, you heard that somewhere.
And shut off that teletype.
Well, as long as you ask so nicely.
Where is he?
Right here, Mrs. Holland.
Are you Malone?
Don't answer that, Counselor. It might tend to incriminate and degrade you.
Don't mind him, Mrs. Holland. His mother was frightened by the happiness, boys. Sit down.
Thank you.
Now, what do you know about this Connie Burton?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I suppose you didn't know that your husband was running around with her.
It's a lie. It was just business with Richie. He was hired to find her.
What do you mean he was hired to find her?
He's a private detective.
Well, what do you got to say to that, Lieutenant?
Oh, it was hardly business. You see, her husband was seeing this Connie for over a month. Right after they met, he made her move from the Beverly to the Marvin.
That's not true.
Then why were you around the Beverly checking on her?
Because I was just trying to help Richie.
Despite the fact that he moved out on you 4 weeks ago?
Well, I didn't kill her. I never handled a gun in my life.
That's possible.
Well, you mean she hired a torpedo for the job?
Yeah.
You got a line on him?
Give us time.
Meanwhile, you expect my client to sit here.
If you have no objection.
I've got 100, but I don't think they'll do me any good. Well, sit tight, Mrs. Holland. I'll get you dispossessed as soon as I can.
Yeah?
I'm looking for... Hey, what happened to you?
I got to mind my own business.
Oh.
Maybe a moral on that for you.
I can't see where. You Richie Holland?
What if I am?
I'm glad to know you. My name is John J. Malone.
Well?
I'm representing your wife.
What for?
Didn't you know the cops are holding her for murder?
What are you mumbling about?
A girl named Connie Burton was knocked off tonight.
What did you say?
Hey, easy, fella. You're ruining the drink.
I asked you something, Malone.
Obviously, the police haven't been here yet.
What did you say about Connie?
She was murdered.
And I must have told her.
You must have told who what?
None of your business. Where is she?
Your wife?
No, Connie.
Well, just where you might expect.
I gotta see her.
Now, wait a minute, Holland. Your wife is in a spot. The police think she was behind the kill.
You're crazy. I know who did it.
Who?
Never mind. I handle this my own way.
They call it your way murder.
Is that what they call it?
The last I heard.
Well, you shouldn't complain. You may get another case out of this yet. See what you can do for us on a family rate.
This Wednesday night, January 11th at 10 o'clock on Tune to Yesterday, we have drama for an hour from Arch Obler, then Lionel Barrymore in the Mayor of the Town series. And if that sound from Murder and Mr. Malone whet your appetite for crime, we have some for you Wednesday night at 11 from episodes of Official Detective and Broadway Is My Beat.
Same weapon was used. Small caliber gun, Danny, .22.
Then whoever killed Foster 5 years ago is still around.
Which brings me to Miss Aggie Blaine.
Oh, how?
That in a routine perusal made by our boys of Vital Statistic Records, a marriage license date of July 30, 1947, was found made out to one Aggie Blaine and one Herbie Morse.
They find the...
Don't interrupt, Danny. A check was made on said Herbie Morse and was found that he owns a drugstore on 23rd corner of 9th. That's how. You care for my coffee, Danny?
No, but thanks anyway, Gino. Thanks for everything.
And crime continues in its own way Thursday night at 10 o'clock, January 12th, with Mystery from Richard Diamond, Private Detective, and The New Adventures of Michael Shane, then Sci-Fi at 11 from 2000+, and a fascinating story on X-1 from 1957. Here are these broadcasts Wednesday, January 11th, and Thursday, January 12th, online streaming live at WRVO.org or on the air on WRVO Public Media. The man who had come to be known as the host for one of the most watched television shows in history made his radio debut on his own show this Thursday, January 12th in 1932. Ed Sullivan, at that point, had been a gossip columnist, Broadway reporter, and a sports writer for several New York publications and was on the air on CBS affiliate WABC, since changed to WCBS. And on his program, he showcased new talent of the day, like musicians, performers, and authors. He would go on to host Ed Sullivan Entertains, which would prove to be the model for TV's Toast of the Town, which was renamed The Ed Sullivan Show. And as you're probably well aware, his show launched the careers, or at least heightened the popularity, of hundreds of performers, like Elvis Presley and that one group of four from Liverpool, England. It was indeed radio that brought Ed Sullivan's name into homes across the country, and this warm reception he received on singer Kate Smith's show makes evident the public's praise as he presents her with a magazine award in a clip from February 1945.
Now, Kate, there's a gentleman standing in the wings back there who has a little gift for you.
Oh, that's very nice, Ted. What is it?
Well, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to let him come out here himself and tell you about it. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to have you meet now one of America's most famous columnists. Also, I might add, a very, very nice guy, and a fellow who has just recently come on the airwaves as a commentator and whose program right now is one of the most widely listened to on radio. Here he is, Mr. Ed Sullivan.
Hello there, Ed.
Hello, Kate, and good evening, Ted.
It's awfully nice to have you with us, Ed.
Why, thank you, Kate. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I was just saying to Dorothy L'Amour that it's seldom in this profession that person comes along whose greatness as a performer is equaled by our greatness as a human being. Such a person is Kate Smith. So, Kate, in giving you this Ed Sullivan Award of Modern Screen Magazine, I give it to you on these two counts: outstanding performance and outstanding citizenship.
Ed Sullivan's radio programs prior to his now iconic time on television aren't nearly as preserved as his TV show would become from 1948 to 1971 when he was known as Mr. Sunday Night. But he did make guest appearances on other shows like Jack Benny's program. As it happens, it was on Ed Sullivan's New York radio show in 1932 that Jack Benny was first heard on the air, with the now memorable line after Ed introduced him, which was, "This is Jack Benny talking. There will be a slight pause while you say, 'Who cares?'" He was able to repay the on-air favor 8 years later in March of 1939 on his own show.
Well, Ed, we're just about to put on our little play, so sit down and make yourself comfortable.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. I didn't come up here to watch your program. I'm here as a reporter.
Oh. Well, what's on your mind, Ed?
I want to get the lowdown on this Maxwell Stroud stuff. Now, what about it? Are you Jack Benny or Maxwell Stroud?
Ed, believe me, I'm Jack Benny. And until 2 weeks ago, I never even heard of Maxwell Strauss.
Well, last Wednesday night, Fred Allen had the real Jack Benny on his program, and a notary public from Waukegan approved it.
Now, wait a minute, Ed. You and I have been friends for a good many years. We started on our careers at the same time. We've palled around together from the bright lights of Broadway to the battle-scarred trenches of France.
I don't remember that.
Well, we've stuck together through thick and thin, you and I, the two of us. We've called each other buddy. Now, whom do you believe, me or the notary?
The notary, buddy.
Well, maybe I didn't build it up enough. But look, Ed, regardless of what Alan said, you know that my name has always been Jack Benny.
Well, you could have changed it, you know. Take my case, for instance. My name wasn't always Sullivan.
Oh, no? What was it?
Hooligan.
Hooligan?
Yes, Edward H. Hooligan.
Oh, what's the H for?
Happy.
Mary. Now, look, Ed, don't pay any attention to Alan. I'm the real Jack Benny, and you can tell your readers tomorrow that I'm not Maxwell Strauss.
Well, let me ask you something. What about that ring you're wearing?
What about it?
Well, what does that M.S. stand for?
Mostly silver.
It does not. That M.S. on my ring stands for Master of Ceremonies.
Master of Ceremonies? Ceremonies begins with a C.
In Russian? Well, I got this ring in Moscow when I was playing Rasputin's Rivoli. I went over very big. Now, Ed, will you please sit down and watch our play?
Oh, no. I'm here for a story, and I'm going to get it.
Say, why don't you run out and get drunk like reporters do in the movies?
Don't evade the issue. Fred Allen has definite proof that you're an imposter. You're not Jack Benny.
I'm not, eh? Well, you call up Mansell Talcott, the mayor of Waukegan. He'll tell you. Why, he planted a great big elm tree in the public square in my honor. Call him up.
I tried to, but he wouldn't come down out of the tree.
Oh, is he up there again? Ever since he visited Hollywood, he thinks he's Tarzan. Now, we got a long play to do tonight, Ed, and I haven't time to discuss this any longer.
All right, Mr. Benny, or Stroud, or whatever your name is. I'll go, but I'll be back and get to the bottom of this, or my name ain't Edward Happy Hooligan Sullivan. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Coming up this Friday on Tune to Yesterday, it's sitcoms with the Smiths of Hollywood and an episode of Burns and Allen. Then it's horror at 11 o'clock with The Weird Circle. Then master storyteller Nelson Olmsted performs a reading of Jack London's To Build a Fire on the show Sleep No More.
He beat his hands, but failed in exciting any sensation. A certain fear of death, dull and oppressive, came to him. The fear quickly became poignant as he realized that it was no longer a mere matter of freezing his fingers and toes or of losing his hands and feet. It was a matter of life and death with the chances against him. This threw him into a panic, and he turned and ran up the creek bed along the old dim trail. He ran blindly, without intention, in fear such as he had never known in his life.
On Saturday Night Mystery, from Casey Crime Photographer, and Vincent Price stars as the Saint. Then True History, from episodes of The Cavalcade of America and the Hallmark Playhouse, bringing us the play John Adams on the American Revolution. These shows, Friday and Saturday, January 13th and 14th, from 10 to midnight, live on the air, and also live at our website, WRVO.org. Now, if 10 to midnight is a little too late for you, we do have a second stream of old-time radio, where previous unscheduled broadcasts are heard. It's at WRVO2. You can listen to it right off of the website at WRVO.org. And that's going to do it for this week in radio history and sound, and I hope you enjoyed this TTY dialer. Let me know if you did or not, or if you have any questions for me you would like answered in this podcast. Email me, mark@wrvo.org. We have much more to listen to this month and more to dig into next week on the Dialer Podcast, where I'll be back to bring you stories from radio's past. Until then, thanks a lot for listening.